at remotepc.com.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Health and Nutrition Program with Dr. Fred Harvey. Fred has bravely driven up from Sarasota today, and he's going to take your phone calls and your email questions about health and nutrition, and we'll be doing that. You can email us here in the studio. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. Fred, how are you? Good to see you.
I'm fantastic. How are you, Rob?
I'm good. The weather's turning nice. I had a nice walk of the dog this morning.
It is
so beautiful outside.
Yeah, I had a great walk myself. It's just so cool and refreshing.
Yeah, it's nice. It's I enjoy summer, but I enjoy fall even more.
Oh, yeah. Autumn is the best for me. Yeah. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day.
Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Sean is going to be playing a speech by an American Indian Movement leader at the 12 noon hour on Midpoint.
Excellent.
So people should stick around for that as we remember the people wiped out by the colonization of North America and South America.
Now we're talking today a bit more about people being wiped out again because of the colonization of the Mideast. Another major crisis going on to stress us all out as we come into the season of stress, the holiday season.
Oh, boy. Well, let's divert right away from politics and talk about health and nutrition
Seriously.
For a moment. So what's on your mind? What have you been reading that you think our listeners should know?
Well, we're coming into that season. It's cold and flu season. And any added stress that we experience during this season is going to make us more susceptible to flu and cold. So anything we can do for de-stressing would be a great thing. I'm actually going to cut off TV this week because I'm tired of watching atrocities. I can read about them, I can hear about them, but I just can't see sitting in front of the TV for a half hour and watching people get shot, blown up, and it just, I know it's happening. I can read about it. We have great journalism out there, and I just don't want to subject my brain to visuals of that anymore. So if there's anything like that that bothers you, be aware and stop doing it so you can de-stress and be happier and healthier for the holiday season and the flu and cold season.
I was going to say something snarky like ignorance is bliss, but I won't say it.
But the thing is, I'm not going to be ignorant. I read 1,000 sources a day. I'm a reader. And so I just don't want to add to it with the visuals. That's just more stress for me. Plus, for me, I can read really fast. And so if I waste a half hour listening to 5 atrocity stories, I could read 50 of them and made a decision about what I need to do. And that's the thing. We feel helpless and hopeless sometimes in the face of all these stresses. And one way to de-stress is to actually find a way to channel out of it. Do something about it. That channels that angst into something better. So if it's as simple as going and volunteering at the food pantry so that you can help homeless for this season, or if it's contributing to Médecins Sans Frontières, the Doctors Without Borders, or any other peace-oriented or health-oriented group, that's a way of channeling your energy and working for a political campaign that you would see fighting against these atrocities.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. And your point about reading is so true, is that that I think you can learn a whole lot more reading in 5 minutes than you can watching cable news for 5 minutes.
Oh, it's so true, because you know they have to give you infotainment, so there's so little. It's like eating standard breakfast cereal. There's very little in it, but it tastes good.
We're going to start taking your phone calls in just a moment. Our phone number, rather. I was going to say your phone number. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. And if you've got a health or nutrition question for Dr. Fred Harvey, MD, you can get in touch with him right now. Best to try to get in touch with him early. If you wait till the last 5 or 10 minutes, you may run out of luck. So, Fred, Let me just mention that our fund drive ended last Wednesday.
Right.
We came up about $40,000 short. Since then, a lot of people have been making contributions to help us reach our goal. And our overall goal was $242,000. This morning, I think Gene tells us that we're at $213,000. So we still need to make up the difference. If you love listening to the Sustainable Living Program or the Health and Nutrition Program, please make a contribution online today. Please go to WMNF.org and make a contribution. Help us stay on the air. Help keep these great programs on the air. I see a donation came in this morning from Ernie in Bradenton. He likes the Waking Hours with Frank Knox. So, Ernie, thanks for that donation. That helps a lot. And Ernie also made a donation to Democracy Now! So, Ernie, that's a big help. Thank you very much. 813-239-9663 is our phone number if you've got a medical question for Dr. Fred Harvey. So you're unplugging as a way to de-stress because stress can lead to maybe illness.
Yeah, your immune system can get disrupted, and so you're not as effective at fighting off these illnesses. But, you know, there's a lot of controversy about vaccines these days. And though I think that vaccines are quite effective and safe, there's a lot of misinformation that makes them sound terrible. There's some populations that maybe shouldn't be addressing vaccinations quite the way we do. I'm not sure that the pediatric dosing schedule is appropriate, but the vaccines work, and the incidence of major problems actually caused by the injection is really slim. But a lot of people worry about the toxins in the immunizations. And so one way you can actually keep yourself safe in this flu season, if you want to get a flu shot, is to get unit dose shot. Do not let them use the multi-dose vial. It may cost more money for you to do that. It's worth paying the money because then you don't get the mercury preservative that is always added to the multi-dose vial. And that way you reduce that risk.
Still, I thought they'd cut that out.
No, it's still in there because once you tap into a multi-dose vial, chances are there's a bacteria that got in and it could go bad. So if you're using the single doses, then there's no preservative needed. And so it's much safer as far as that's concerned. Overall, though, the concept of vaccination looks towards something called herd immunity. Get as many people vaccinated as possible to reduce the incidence in the population in general. That's really important if you have infants and toddlers. It's really important if you have elderly people, especially people who are elderly with illnesses, diabetes, heart disease, lung disease. All these things put you at higher risk for problems. And so it makes sense to have an immunization if you're in a family that has people who are vulnerable, or if you work in a situation like a nursing home where it spreads like wildfire. These are important things. That's why they enforce immunization in concentrated healthcare facilities like that, hospitals and nursing homes.
So right now you see all these ads for flu vaccine. Who should get a flu vaccine in your mind?
Well, the CDC says everybody. But most
everybody, including a 20-year-old and a 15-year-old and a 30-year-old?
Yeah, because that's the way we address herd immunity. You get as many people vaccinated as possible so you don't spread it through the population like wildfire. But many of those people that are in their 20s and 30s are healthy and actually have a lot of resilience to it and may not get that bad a complication from it. Because really, the flu itself doesn't generally kill. It can. But what happens is you get a secondary bacterial pneumonia like streptococcus or staphylococcus, which just overwhelms the system's ability to fight back because the flu already took it down. And so those people are at high risk. And anybody that has those medical conditions, if they have cancer on chemotherapy, if they have lung disease, if they have heart disease, or if they have diabetes, these are high-risk people, and a flu could kill them because their bodies don't tolerate the extra burden.
Is there a way to protect yourself from flu without taking the vaccine? Like, for instance, Eve always said, and I'm sure you say this too, wash your hands.
Absolutely.
You know, keep your hands clean, and you're not likely to pick up as many colds and sore throats through the season as you would if you didn't wash your hands more frequently. So can you avoid the flu the same way?
Absolutely. Yeah, you want to wash all the time. Now, the difference between the cold and the flu is the cold isn't as easily transmissible through surfaces. It's more an aerosol. The flu, though, is a horrible aerosol. One cough, it'll fill a whole room with flu virus. And so you're at high risk there. But the washing the hands keeps the, you know, you touch surfaces. You're going to have it on there. So if you know you've touched surfaces, keep your hands away from your nose, your eyes, and your mouth. That way you won't inoculate yourself. Wash all the time to keep that surface contamination down. Get good sleep. Drink at least 2 liters of water a day. And stay away from people that are ill.
Well, let's say I've had the flu. At what point am I most contagious in the cycle of having the flu?
The moment you mount a fever, it's obvious that the virus is coming in. So within 24 hours of the fever, you're really shedding. You're going to be coughing. Usually it all happens at once. As soon as you start coughing, you're shedding virus crazily, and it'll go on for a week.
And so that's when you should stay out of being interactive with other people.
Yeah, yeah. And so if you realize, so there's a difference. If you feel that little scratch at the back of your throat and you feel a little achy and a little iffy, and a day later you feel snuffly and start coughing, that's not a flu. You get a flu fast. You get a high fever. You feel like a truck hit your body. You ache everywhere. You're so fatigued. You don't want to get out of bed. And you have a horrible cough, maybe even a headache. This is flu. You don't go out of the house unless it's just to get medicine. You don't want to be around people because you're spreading it. If you go out, please be courteous and wear a mask so you don't cough these things on other people, because the person that's healthy wearing a mask isn't very well protected because the aerosol will sneak around the edges of the mask.
Just going back, what are the symptoms of the flu?
The high fever, over 101, racking body aches, just horrible, horrible feeling. High fever, chills. You get shakes and rigors, and you get a really dry, mean cough that just hurts.
And once you have it, what's the best way to treat it?
Well, actually, there's some antiviral medication out there. If you get it within the first 24 to 36 hours, you can really make an impact with Tamiflu, and there's a couple of other ones out there. I've used Tamiflu frequently and had great success. It'll stop the flu within 24 hours, maybe even within 12 if you get it early enough. So there's really good medicine out there. So talk to a doctor if you feel like you got those symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And nutrition-wise, is there anything you advise for people that have this high fever and have these other symptoms?
Oh, yeah. I think, chicken soup actually has evidence. There was a brilliant doctor, a pulmonologist at UCLA, that took his grandmother's Lithuanian chicken soup, and he did a study with white blood cells that were tagged with a radioactive tracer. And he saw that in the people that ate chicken soup versus the control group that didn't, there was less inflammation in the lungs.
Can you, if you're a vegetarian, can you take vegetable soup, vegetable broth?
Well, there's a key component, I think, of the chicken broth is the amino acid cysteine. Cysteine seems to have some really good effect as far as cleaning up the lungs. It goes into making glutathione. So it's a great antioxidant detox agent. It's just really good. I'm not sure. I've never seen data on any other.
Can you take glutathione?
You can take glutathione too, but I just take NAC. N-acetylcysteine is a great mucolytic, meaning it breaks up mucus. So it's like better than that branded stuff that everybody uses gets rid of the green globs. It's a natural amino acid that helps your body detox and clean up the mucus.
Am I right to think that when you have a lot of mucus, those are your white blood cells trying to attack the infection in your body, or is that, would that be the wrong way to look at
it? It's actually a combination. The whole inflammation process results in more white blood cells, and the lining of the lungs creates more mucus as a barrier, because once the virus injures the lining, it gets kind of leaky. And so the mucus is kind of a spackle until the lining can reheal.
Okay. I see we got two phone calls. It looks like we got about six emails. Donald sent a long email he wants you to check out. So, Donald, we got your email. Probably not good to check it out on the air, but thank you very much for the email. David writes this. What do you think, Fred, to be a good alternative to the crappy sugar bomb candies usually given out for Halloween? Are there any healthier prepackaged options available that he would recommend?
Healthier prepackaged options. Well, there actually are a lot of organic candies out there, and we know that kids like candy. So I'm not a big fan of sugar, but it's, you know, once a year thing, maybe some organic ones that don't have artificial colors, artificial flavors, and all that stuff in it. That said, you could actually make popcorn balls. Yeah, there was the whole thing, 20, 30 years ago about apples. But honestly, I still think an apple's a great food, and there's nothing wrong with giving them out.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about quality chocolate that doesn't have a lot of sugar in it?
same thing as the non-artificial candies, the organic candies. You know, a little bit of chocolate is really a delight, and it's a great antioxidant, and so why not?
Now, here's an email that says, thanks for all you do. Would you please suggest some foods to avoid when dealing with long-term acid reflux?
Long-term acid reflux. Well, make a food diary. What's actually triggering it for you? If it's constant, you may have actually a problem with your esophagus and maybe need an endoscopy to see if there's a problem with the sphincter not being closed or something like that. But you want to stay away from greasy foods because grease and acid mix and float to the top, and so you reflux that. So try to stay away from that kind of stuff. Spicy foods add to it. Spicy foods may even dilate the lower esophageal sphincter and allow more stuff to reflux. So that combination of the fat and the spice is not a good thing.
So no hot buffalo chicken wings for starters. That might be something a
bad choice. And combine that with a beer that'll make it burp up. Yes, I think that wouldn't be good.
Okay. Are there some other food candidates that might cause acid reflux? Are there besides?
There really are. A whole group of foods called histamine inducers and histamine carriers. So foods like tomatoes and avocado can trigger this because of histamine. Alcohol releases histamine from your gut. Histamine actually increases acid output and increases the squeezing motion, the gastric motility. So think about it. You fill the acid bag full and then you squeeze hard on it. There's going to be acid squirting somewhere, so stop the histamine foods. Look for, you can actually easily search it online, histamine intolerance diet. It works for a lot of people to avoid those things. Some of the other ones that are in that, vinegars, preserved foods that are naturally fermented, aged cheeses, aged meats like sour summer sausage, those things, they're actually histamine inducers.
All right, you're talking, some of those foods are really great, unfortunately.
They are.
All right, so so you said histamine intolerance diet. So there's a diet that would suggest how to reduce acid reflux?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, people should look for that. Well, our phone number is 813-239-9663. Dr. Fred Harvey is here, as he is every other Monday. He alternates with the Sustainable Living Program. Today, we're listening to the Health and Nutrition Program. Here's an email from Beth. She says, I'm allergic to thimerosal, the preservative, and a veteran, and received an injection which was not containing preservative and was not in individual shot. Not sure what Beth means there.
It sounds like she may have found a non-preserved multi-dose vial. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
And it may be out there. But for the most part, if you want to make sure, just say you want unit dose or single shot.
Now, Bill says this, Friday evening, we were at a bonfire outdoor party with friends, and about 10 p.m., a mosquito truck came blazing through. We freaked out and jumped in the car and split. Our friends in Pasco County say it is safe. Eve always said that anything that can alter the cells in your body is hazardous. What is your opinion about what comes out of the back of those mosquito trucks?
So Eve and I had a similar childhood in that mosquito trucks went through our neighborhoods and we used to chase them around because it was fun, having no idea that that was not safe. And it still is not safe. These are poisons, and we really don't need to be subjected to petrochemicals, even if they are not specifically designed to hurt us. They're bizarre petrochemicals that our bodies don't know what to do with once we ingest them. So let's stay away from that. Your friends that thought it was safe should get re-educated, and you are good to actually leave the area because you spared yourself a toxic event. If you do get that toxic event, find a nice homeopathic remedy that helps you drain, or take some N-acetylcysteine because it actually helps make glutathione, which helps detoxify pesticides.
Let's go to the phones. We're going to go to Lynn in Clearwater. Lynn, thanks for calling in to the Health and Nutrition Program on WMNF.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I would like to know, how do I get my flu shot and my pneumonia shot? Can I get them together? Do I need to space it out?
That's a great question.
I've never had either, and I'm in my 60s.
So the pneumonia vaccine is something that is against bacterial pneumonia. The streptococcal pneumonia, there's a new vaccine out that really is against about 13 or so different strains of the pneumococcal bacteria. And it's really safe. I've not read of any major complications from that one. And the flu shot can be given together, and most of the major pharmacies are actually now giving vaccines. So it's easiest to go there, because most doctor's offices I have quit carrying them years ago because my practice is solo and the vaccines are highly expensive. And if we would not use them all, they're just a waste. So pharmacies are going through tons of them.
Okay, and you said the flu shot should be a single dose if I don't want mercury.
Yes, or ask them if their multi-dose has no mercury in it. They may actually have something. A previous email suggested that maybe it's out there. I don't know of that, but I think the safest to just say, give me the single dose.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Have a wonderful day.
All right, Lynn, thank you. Good to hear from you. Looks like a line one is the line that has the static on it. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. Let's go to Edward in St. Petersburg. Edward, you're on with Dr. Fred Harvey.
Good morning, fellas. Appreciate you taking my call.
Hello, Edward.
A couple quick things. I'll try to make it short. Recently, I was diagnosed with AFib. In addition to that, I also have sleep apnea.
Yes.
Once I found out that I had AFib, I have not done a follow-up yet with any doctors. But I'm going to guess, like most other people, once I discovered it, I jumped on a Google machine, learned as much about it as I possibly could, and the things that were recommended on the medical websites, at least the most common things of the list that was recommended, was magnesium, fish oil, and CoQ10, which I've been taking. But my question regarding that is there something else? I dread the thought of going to a doctor and being given a script for some kind of heart medicine that is going to be discovered 10 years down the road to have been a bad medication, and it's going to wind up killing me. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I just dread that thought of getting some kind of medication like that.
So I have a question for you.
Sure.
Is your sleep apnea treated?
Not technically, officially, medically.
Okay. Sleep apnea is the cause of atrial fibrillation in many, many cases. You need adequate sleep apnea treatment to put this to bed. And I think it's time for an evaluation with a real sleep doctor and get on CPAP, because it's the gold standard. It works. And I actually have a patient that was diagnosed, a year ago with sleep apnea. Shortly thereafter, she was diagnosed, with atrial fibrillation. Shortly thereafter, she was diagnosed with sleep apnea. And after 6 months of treatment, her AFib disappeared. Gone.
I got you.
So you really got to get on that. And another thing that one of my other clients just recently did, he's been going through a lot of grief, and he developed AFib. I think he also has sleep apnea, but it didn't show up on our first screening test. We're going to do another one. But in the meantime, we started having him do HeartMath. Look up heartmath.org online. HeartMath is one of the most studied types of, I guess, meditative intervention. Huge amounts of medical data on it. His atrial fibrillation went into sinus rhythm after doing his HeartMath work. So find HeartMath by a device, or just go online and use their tools. But it's a meditative device that helps to calm the heart and stabilize the heart rhythm.
I got you. Now, are you saying HeartMath, like mathematics?
Yes.
HeartMath. Oh, math.
M-A-T-H.
Okay. I got you. Okay. I'll do that. Well, let me ask you one thing about the CPAP, because I've done a little bit of homework on it.
Yes.
And here's my question. I also have sinus issues.
Right.
I don't know what it is I'm allergic to. Actually, I'm scheduled to go to see an allergy specialist this week to have some tests done to find out what it is that's causing my sinus passageway to swell up. It usually, it happens periodically. throughout the day, but mostly at night, and it's always the worst when I'm laying down and go to sleep.
Hmm.
So I understand how the CPAP works, but if I'm laying there, my sinuses are jacked up, and my muscles in my throat have completely relaxed, my tongue has dropped back, I'm snoring like a sailor, how does the air get into my lungs? How is it pushed past those two major obstacles?
Well, that's a good question, and pretty difficult for me to answer from here. I think a couple things need to happen. One, get your CPAP or your full sleep evaluation to see how bad it is and what the options are. There are other options. Dental splinting can work. I've seen it work in one or two people. But treating the sinus problem is another issue. So get that dealt with and you'll be able to treat this a little bit better. The easy thing, though, with CPAP is, though, it forces the air through the airways. So even if your nose is a bit stuffy, it's going to push air in. It's going to help you breathe because it reinflates everything. So it's quite possible that even with slight sinus issue, you could get that fixed. But using an over-the-counter nasal steroid or something like that might be something that's necessary to keep your nose shrunk so you can do this the right way. I'm not really sure. You need to talk to your allergist and your sleep doctor and your heart doctor and get on top of this. By the way, the medicines that you're concerned about, there's really none of them out there right now that look long-term bad. Coumadin, warfarin, has been around forever. It's been my favorite atrial fibrillation stroke preventer. But Eliquis, the newer one on there, and there's another one, Xarelto, they have a better stroke profile and similar bleeding profiles if you pay attention. Nobody really wants to be on a blood thinner, but to reduce your risk of stroke from about something like 20 to 30% per year while you have AFib down to about 3% seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
All right, Edward, thank you.
Dr. Fred, can I ask you one more real quick thing?
What you need?
On the allergy test that I'm going for this week, is there anything I should ask the doctor? I want to go in as prepared as I possibly can. I hate going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So when I go in to see her, I want to try to be as prepared as I can, ask her the right questions, give her all the information she needs, and all that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's kind of pretty basic. You just told me a good story that you get stuffy at night. Maybe you have a dust mite problem with your bedroom, something like that. There could be something at your house that's doing it. So allergy testing seems to make sense if it's happening all the time like that.
I got you.
All right, Edward, thank you. Good luck.
Thank you, fellas.
Thank you.
Welcome.
And you're listening to Dr. Fred Harvey on 88.5 FM. Thanks to Liz in Spring Hill. She just made a $10 contribution. Liz, thank you. And she likes the Sustainable Living Program and the Health and Nutrition Program.
Thank you, Liz.
Let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Smitty in Tampa. Smitty, what's your question for Fred?
Hello. I have a broken femur, and I'd like to get the flu shot, but the word compromised immune system seems so broad. Am I compromised by a broken femur, and I'm in a wheelchair, and I got a stage 4 pressure wound? Am I compromised? I don't feel it, but that's only because I'm very optimistic.
Well, it sounds like you've not got immune compromise, maybe some structural compromise, and that does bring some burden to the whole system. So the immune system is paying attention there because the break acts like inflammation, and so you got a lot of process going on there. The stage 4 decubitus, the pressure sore, that is a serious issue. Also, again, structural, not necessarily immune system. So I don't think, unless you have one of those things that brings down the immune system, a autoimmune disease, a cancer, a lymphatic problem, or diabetes, I think you're probably pretty safe.
Okay, and then the flu shot itself, they're blended. I like flu shots. I take them every year. But what if I take one at the beginning of the season now? Can I take one at the end of the season?
Well, supposedly the vaccine will last you a good 6 months, if not longer. So I'm not sure you'd need to repeat it then, because by then it's cycling down and we're looking at the next season flu.
All right. Thank you for your work and your volunteerism.
You're very welcome. Thank you for calling in.
All right, Smitty, thanks a lot. Thank you. And we've got an open line. The number to call is 813-239-9663. You're listening to the Health and Nutrition Program on WMNF in Tampa. And Anonymous writes, what is your opinion about taking SBOs, that's soil-based organisms, as a probiotic?
That's really an interesting one. I'm not certain. I don't think we have enough data yet, but as I was at a conference 2 weeks ago discussing some of these microbiome issues with a lot of experts, nearly everybody touched on microbiome, no matter what they were talking about. One of them suggested that the spore biotics, the soil-based organisms, are different from what we normally have in our gut, and they've noticed that they actually will take over a microbiome in vitro that's in the lab. And so will they do that in your gut? I'm not sure. I think you have a pretty resilient microbiome usually, but I don't think we have a lot of evidence based on the soil-based organisms. The ones that are the human-based, we definitely have a lot on, and you can find that on your probiotic label. When you look at the name Lactobacillus acidophilus or Bifidobacterium, after that there's going to be an alphanumerical like LA114 or how are you? H-O-W-A-R-U is actually a trade name for a Bifidobacterium. How are you, Biff? And it's really a good one. It's very, very soothing for the gut. So I'm not a big fan of the soil-based, but there are a couple strains that might be useful. I'm just not going to recommend that now. I think there's a lot more to learn about them.
Okay, let's go back to the phones, and let's go to John in Tampa. John, you're on with Dr. Fred Harvey.
Hey, good morning. Nice show.
Thanks, John.
I just wanted to make a comment about CPAP and my own experience. I've used it for 10 years. I was diagnosed. Of course, I was snoring and not getting a good night's sleep, and had the test, and I've used it ever since, and it's made a big difference in my life. It's amazing. But I also, had, about that time, 10 years ago or so, started getting acid reflux, which is horrible. And once I got the CPAP, the acid reflux solved itself. So I got kind of a two-for-one benefit. And maybe the listeners at WMNF would be encouraged to look into that CPAP then.
Yeah, that's a great point. Actually, I've seen it happen. And if you think about the dynamics of somebody trying to suck for air, they're changing that whole pressure dynamic in their chest and abdomen, and reflux is really, really common in sleep apnea. So that may be a warning. If you wake up with acid in your mouth every morning, you might be having sleep apnea.
Hey, well, thank you again.
All right, John, thank you. And let's go to Bob in Mango. Bob, you're on the air. We're talking about health and nutrition. What's your question?
Yes, anything I can do for neuropathy of the feet?
Absolutely. One thing that you should really do is get some testing to find out why you have the neuropathy and get that out of the way. I mean, if it could be diabetes, it could be a toxic exposure, and those can be actually treated. But
it's from diabetes.
From diabetes, okay. So
type 2.
Is it painful?
Oh, very. It's like walking on rocks barefooted.
So, wow, and that's...
Your feet burn.
Yeah.
Like they're on fire, then you got pins and needles sticking in your feet.
Yes. So you're at the stage where the nerves are starting to feel the pressure, but they haven't died yet, so you can actually recover from this. And there's some really good research about some nutritional supplements that actually help rebuild the nerves. Alpha-lipoic acid is one of them.
Okay, I'm taking that.
And the dose that I have seen in the literature and I have had patients use successfully is 1,200 milligrams to 1,800 milligrams a day. Large dose. Fish oil helps to support the regrowth of the nerves. So 3 grams of fish oil a day. And B12, methylated B12, methylcobalamin, methyl folic acid, and benfotiamine are 3B vitamins that are very potent at helping heal peripheral neuropathy. So if you get on a dose of those, high dose for some time, you will probably see results within 3 to 6 months. It will take 3 to 6 months because it took years for this to develop.
Okay, she said 1,200 to 1,800 is it grams or ounce of grams, I guess.
That's milligrams. Alpha.
Okay, milligrams.
Yeah, and of the B12, it's in the 2,000 microgram range. The folic acid, methylfolate, is in the 2,000 microgram range, and the benfotiamine, 200 milligram.
Now, you said I can take all these at the same time?
Yes.
Okay, I've got the B12. What was the other two? Sorry.
Methylfolate, MTHF, it's called. 5-MTHF. 5-MTHF. That's methyl tetrahydrofolate. That's the full name of the actual chemical, and that's 2 milligrams or 2,000 micrograms. And the other thing is benfotiamine, B-E-N-F-O-T-I-A-M-I-N-E. And that is activated thiamine, very potent for helping the nerves.
Okay. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay, Bob.
Have a great day. Thanks.
Good luck, Bob. So would all of those B vitamins, if you took a multiple B vitamin, you know, complex, would all of those be in a B vitamin complex?
They would be, but probably not at the dose that you want, because they tend to spread it out with smaller doses of everything to so it fits in the capsule. If you want the therapeutic dose, it's probably going to be line items, or sometimes they put the methylcobalamin and methylfolate in one capsule so that you can still get enough of the total amount in each. It's interesting, though, there's the long email mentioned that there is a correlation between bone fractures and high doses of vitamin B6 and B12 in postmenopausal women. And so this is a Scientific American study from September of this year. And so I haven't read the article, but my understanding of most of these is that they do try to control for all kinds of other variables, but we don't know exactly what this means, because the key word there is correlation. It's not saying causative, but what is it about the women that are taking high doses of B6 and B12 that is different from the other women, and what does it do in their physiology? I haven't read the article, don't know, but that's a good point to bring up. So we want to treat the neuropathy with high dose for a time. Once we get to the point where it's feeling better, we back off on the really high doses, because that's what therapeutic vitamin intervention is about. It's not meant for permanent usage like medication that's patching you up and holding you together despite the system trying to run down. This is about fixing the problem and then going to maintenance doses.
All right. Well, Bob and Mango, thanks a lot. Let's go to Rosemary in Sarasota with her health and nutrition question. Hi, Rosemary. You're on WMNF.
Hi there, and hi there, Dr. Harvey.
Hello.
Hi. Okay, you know, I really called in to just make a pledge, and I wound up on the phone with you, which is delightful, but I always have a million questions anyway. I just had an endoscope, and the doctor said he thinks I have Barrett's esophagus.
Yes.
And he wants me on the purple pill.
Yes.
Indefinitely. I don't like that idea. What would you recommend?
Well,
diet.
Have you had symptomatic reflux, heartburn?
Actually, you know what? I really don't.
Yes, that's the problem. Many people that have this problem don't, so you don't know whether you're going to be successful with treatment. If you had heartburn and it went away, you know you're probably on the right path.
Right.
So Barrett's esophagus isn't cancer. It may or may not be a predisposition to cancer, but it is associated, again, correlated with cancer. If you continually abuse the Barrett's esophagus changes, those cells can deteriorate into cancer cells. And so that's the worry for any doctor looking at it. I have seen people have healing of their Barrett's using a variety of different techniques. And so if you had symptoms, getting rid of the symptoms would be first, so you know you're not refluxing, but adding in some glutamine, some deglycerized licorice, that's DGL. It's a licorice that no longer has the hypertensive properties, but still heals the lining of the gut. Glutamine aloe is another very useful tool. So liquid aloe, some deglyceride licorice, chewable tablets, some glutamine powder. These are all good things that soothe the lining of the gut and heal it. Zinc carnosine is a patcher for holes in your gut. You chew up a tablet of that and it kind of coats the lining of your gut. The zinc helps the skin heal a bit in there. But it's hard to say whether the purple pill actually really does anything for this other than reduce acid. And I've not seen any clinical studies that show that it actually heals the esophagus. But at least it's a thought that it might prevent further deterioration, and I think that's why it's been prescribed.
Okay, great. So in the meantime, I will look for that low histamine diet. Is that what you had suggested?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Right. Yeah, because I don't think I eat many foods that are terribly acidic, but of course, I don't know. So I am going to check into that.
Very good.
For sure.
Okay.
Rose. All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Harvey.
You're so welcome.
Thank you.
Robin, have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you, Rosemary. And Nina writes this, are there nutrients that can help your system cope with cravings, et cetera, when you stop smoking or when you stop vaping cold turkey?
That's a great question. And actually, I was going to talk about something else today, and this question leads right into it. I just read an article, brand new, just published, electronic cigarette smoking induces lung carcinoma and bladder hyperplasia in mice, meaning that it probably causes bladder cancer as well. And we know that nicotine causes bladder cancer in humans.
And here, just months ago, they were calling it safe.
Yes, yeah. Safer than cigarettes. In whose mind? The marketer's mind, the profiteer's mind, the capitalist's mind. In any event, here we have the first, you know, mice reproduce really quickly. Mice grow to adulthood in weeks. And so in 2 years, we figure out, actually, no, it was 54 weeks. So in a year, we found out that that would be probably, you know, 27 human years or something, the mouse got cancer. So teenagers using Juuls are actually endangering their future quite rapidly, and the amount that they're doing delivers so much more nicotine than people can tolerate smoking nasty sticks that they can keep using more and more nicotine than you can tolerate from that combusted tobacco stuff. So this is really a big, important issue here, and it's time to ban them outright, so that because we haven't ever studied the rest of the toxicity with them. They're a chemical delivery device that has had no medical supervision whatsoever. It's crazy.
You talked about the mechanism by which lungs are injured by vaping last time you were on. Could you talk about that again? What's the mechanism by which they're injured?
Several different things. One, the nicotine itself is injurious. It impairs the lung's ability to heal itself. And then you have the high temperature materials coming out of the vape gun, essentially. It's basically spraying hot lava into your lungs in vapor form because you got propylene glycol and glycerin and MCT oil, all these things that shouldn't be in your lung anyway. We don't eat through our lungs, so why are we putting those chemicals in there? So we get this surface injury. These things act like surfactants, so they ruin the ability of the surface of the lung to have its expansion ability. You have to have a smooth, fluid surface. If it's interrupted, then you get emphysema over time. So we're looking at all kinds of major damage here.
Well, you're listening to the Health and Nutrition Program on 88.5 FM. Let's go back to the phones.
But wait, to address Nina, just because I didn't answer her question.
Yeah,
yes, there are some things you can do for cravings. Acupuncture is wonderful. And then there are a bunch of supplements out there that they use great names like Crave Stop and all these things. Apicurb. They have a little bit of tyrosine, usually a little bit of 5-HTP. Amino acids that support dopamine and serotonin, so you can be calmer and more satisfied. If you have dopamine, you don't feel like you need to get that next hit. And so if you can raise those levels, you might find that you can tolerate it.
Okay. Let's go to Stuart in St. Petersburg. Hi, Stuart. You're on. What's your question?
Hey, good morning. There's an article out this morning about one of the actors in the Hamilton play, his 3-year-old daughter passed away after struggling with seizures from the time she was about 7 months old. And I just wondered if you thought that was possibly vaccine related, and what is your overall position on those vaccines that the kids get at, you know, 1 month or 2 months and 6 months, and, you know, they get a barrage of them in the first year or something. But I'll hang up and listen to your answer, I guess. Thank you.
Okay, right, good question. That's a really sad story, and any loss of a child is devastating. Epilepsy is a well-known medical condition. It does cause death. Is there a trigger from a chemical or other thing like an injection? Possibly, but epilepsy's got a genetic basis, so it's quite possible this girl just had that. My view on vaccines is they're safe and effective if used with caution and thought. I don't believe that the current pediatric dosing regimen is safe for everyone, because it seems there are correlates with other problems. We can't say that vaccines cause autism because there's no direct evidence. Again, we get back to that word correlation. There seems to be a pattern, but it doesn't seem to be causative. That's because there's so many other variables. So I think that one piece of information that came out is it seemed that more complications happened between 12 and 18 months in kids that got the MMR. So if you can put off the pediatrician's needle until after 18 months, or if you could possibly keep the kid out of daycare and do it after age 3, there's very little evidence from what came up in the alternative literature that there would be a problem after that. And so, again, if it's not a problem after a window in time, why not just move the window in time?
So you mentioned the MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella. Would you take those vaccines separately if you could? If you had a child who was of vaccination age, would you ask that your doctor give those separately as opposed to all three at once?
Well, that's what the premise was from Andrew Wakefield, who is the one that started the controversy, is embroiled in the controversy, had his license removed because of the controversy, and it's quite possible that there were some actual financial interests in his decisions and what he said. But he did make some observations that kind of made sense. It looked like in kids that received the single valent, like measles alone, mumps alone, and rubella alone, those didn't seem to cause the same problem as the combined MMR. And so what was interesting is within a month of him going to the National Health Service in England at the central government board meeting, and he said, look, I'm not an anti-vaxxer. I believe they work. Let's just hold off on the MMR and use these single valent vaccines again. Again, it's like using the single dose of the flu shot. You know, there may be less preservatives in them and other things that may reduce risk. But those vaccines were banned immediately within a month by the National Health Service in England, and they were actually stopped being manufactured by Merck, and they only make the MMR now, within a month of him stating that. So I'm not really sure what was going on there, but that's the information that I have. But the information that was presented is if you wait until after 18 months or 3 years, you have much less risk with it. So is there a possibility of just changing the dosing schedule? Seems like it might make sense.
This next question comes from Mary in Bradenton. She says, when I use nutritional yeast, it seems I break out in small rashes on different parts of my body. Could it be candida? Even though I've been told nutritional yeast is inactive, I may be yeast sensitive. So if so, I'm wondering whether I should also eliminate organic popcorn from my diet. I will listen for your response, writes Mary.
So, Mary, great question. It's not candida because nutritional yeast is, I believe, Saccharomyces. And so what you're probably having is a reaction to the yeast itself. Your immune system does not like yeast. So I'd just say find a different B vitamin source and flavoring agent. And I love your suggestion that small boxes of organic raisins are a great treat. I like that. I haven't thought about raisins in a while. Thank you.
So Anonymous writes, I have stage 4 lung cancer and will start chemo in 2 weeks. I also have rheumatoid arthritis. Should I get a flu shot?
That's a really good question. So you're going to start chemo in 2 weeks. If you get the shot today, then it will be effective in 2 weeks when your immune system is challenged by the chemo. It may be a really good choice for you to go do that.
All right, let's go back to the phones. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and Dr. Fred Harvey is here answering your questions about health and nutrition. Let's go to Smokey, who's in St. Petersburg. Hi, Smokey.
Morning, Doc. How you doing?
Great, Smokey. How are you?
I was a little upset.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Hey, listen, for the past 4 or 5 years, I've been going to these different doctors here in town. And so far, they've accused me of having AFib, neuropathy, and I tell them that I have extreme weakness, extreme fatigue, and I got dizzy so much I can hardly walk. You got any ideas of what can help me out?
I think you need a neurologist to help you figure this one out. And with neuropathy and all that fatigue, I wonder if you have sleep apnea.
I got a neurologist, and he concurs with all my findings, but yeah, he doesn't. They've done a lot of tests. So, you know, maybe the answer lies in food or vitamins.
It just may. So a good clean diet, absent of added sugar and artificial ingredients, high in vegetables, 8 or 10 servings a day, clean meats, lots of water, good sleep, those things all help. But it sounds like you have more going on there. The AFib is a big warning that you got something more serious underlying that, because AFib doesn't come out of the blue. Something's causing it.
I've had it for like 25 years.
And have you been checked for sleep apnea?
Yeah, that didn't help out any.
And you have sleep apnea?
Don't think so, because I have cancer also, so I got to get up about every hour and a half to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't get a lot of good sleep. So I'm just wondering, you know, again, what you can suggest to help me out.
Find a doctor that can help you explore better sleep, figure out what's causing the frequent urination or bathroom time at night. There's a lot of things there. You got many moving targets. It would be hard to say that there's one thing that would help.
Well, I agree with you. You know, I've got medicine for all of it, but it doesn't seem to help. So that's the reason I called your show. You seem to replace a lot of value on food.
I do.
So, in addition to regular food, like, you know, vegetables and meat and vegetables, I take a B complex, B12, potassium, and then vitamin C, iron, and zinc.
Sounds like a decent start there.
So, what else can I do?
I'd say see a functional medicine doctor and get a full evaluation, because you got too many moving targets for me to say one thing is going to help.
Yeah, well, that's what I understand that. I get that about from every doctor I visit. So, all right, Doc. Hey, thanks for your evaluation there and your answers. And I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, Smokey. Thanks a lot. Let's go to Katie in Plant City. Katie, you're on. What's your question?
Hi. I was wondering if there is any resources you can recommend to locate, like, holistic doctors or nutritionists. I've done a Google search, and it's hard to kind of pinpoint sort of, you know, certified practitioners or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's really important, because a lot of people out there use the functional medicine terminology, but they have no idea what it is. They like the term. It sounds good. It's about optimizing function, but they've never taken a functional medicine course. So if you want to know who's aware of what this paradigm really is, I would go to ifm.org or functionalmedicine.org. Goes to the same place. On there, they have a physician search. And all you need to do is type in your zip code, and it'll show you somebody within, like, I think you can set the parameters, but it starts at 150 miles. And those are all people that have, the ones that are listed on there are people that have taken what's called AFMCP, the Applied Functional Medicine Clinical Practice, which is a week-long intensive in what this is all about. And then there's the next level that is the IFMCP, the IFM Certified Practitioner, which is my predecessor Eve and me. And I think there's about 1,200 of us now certified worldwide.
And are all of those folks also medical doctors? Like, do they have their medical degree as well, or is that not a prerequisite?
It's actually, you have to have a healthcare license of a certain nature. So the ones that I know of that are accepted are MD, DO, a nurse practitioner, registered dietitian, and licensed nutritional counselor. I believe there are some clinical psychologists also that have taken the test.
But it's not just like I guess I'm just, I find, you know, there's some organizations that say, you know, it kind of anybody can go take the class and then they're certified this or that. So can you say that website one more time for me, please?
IF as in Frank, M.org or functionalmedicine.org.
All right. Katie, we're out of time. Thank you very much. You know, on that website, I assume that if you're a DO, it says it next to your name on
Absolutely.
That website.
Absolutely. Exactly. Whole practice information.
So Katie wants to choose an MD. She can go to that website and choose an MD.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Fred, we're out of time. We want to thank Betty from Sarasota, who made a $20 contribution. She says that you're doing a huge service for the community. So, Betty, thank you very much for that $20 donation. And, Fred, thanks for coming up.
And I want to thank Betty for having me on her show on WSLR last Thursday.
How about that? Okay.
Thank you, Betty.
Betty, thank you. So, Fred, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay.
All right. That's Dr. Fred Harvey, who comes here and hosts the Health and Nutrition Program every other Monday at 10 o'clock here on WMNF in Tampa. Next week in this time slot, on Monday, we'll hear the Sustainable Living Program. This is WMNF Tampa-St. Petersburg. Thanks to Frank Knox, our phone producer today. Here is